Hey everyone, I'm Devin.
And I'm Asia, and we're your hosts, and this is the latest episode of On Their Behalf.
This is not an ad, but do you love, have you ever tried the Core water?
You've told me about this
before.
Oh,
I have?
Yeah.
Oh my, it's honestly the most amazing water ever.
Because one time I had a hangover, and you're like, oh my gosh, and you like whipped it out, and you're like, this will solve all your problems.
Yeah, like, and they
and
have...
I was like, are you sure this isn't an ad?
Yeah, right? It should be. They should pay me, because I literally tell everybody about them. And there's this gas station, the only gas station that I can find it, is they have a huge one. It's literally, this one is 30.4 fluid ounces.
Oh my gosh.
But they have one that's like 70 ounces. It's huge.
Oh my gosh.
It's so big, but it's like all the water you need in like a day.
Nice.
Yeah, I love it.
Maybe I should get some.
Yeah.
My only thing with that is it's like plastic.
I know. Oh, but wait, there is something on the bottle that says something. It's 100% recyclable, BPA-free plastic bottle. What does that mean?
Eh.
Is that, like, still not good?
Like, you can recycle it. No, it's, like, the best of the plastics, but it's still plastic. But we have, like, a nice filter that we use in our house, but, like, and thank God, because our water in our shower, like, if I don't clean it after a while, it just is, like, rust everywhere,
like soap.
From our old pipes. And I'm like, this is what I'm washing my dishes in.
Yeah.
This is what I'm showering in. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want a whole house filtration system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
we have a water filter. Is it a water filter or a water softener? I can't remember which one it's called, but it's.
Well, probably both.
Yeah. And it like makes, like we don't, the shower doesn't have like. Soap scum, not soap scum, but like the lime
scale.
Yeah, scale on it. It doesn't like that's the water filter takes the that out. I still don't drink it because I'm not. I don't know. Like it doesn't matter how much you tell me that tap water is like how clean it is. I just don't.
Would you drink it if you had like another filter?
Maybe. No? But I feel like I filter, I have a zero water container too that I filter like tap water through that.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. So that's what I use that, but I don't drink it like out of the tap.
Right. No, yeah. I don't do that either. Because it's like I have very serious proof that like I'm showering in.
Yeah. And California water is really not that great.
No, it's not.
So.
This is, like, I'll know I'm rich when I have a home full, like, water softening system.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, even before that, when I can get those, like, water filters in the glass jugs and somebody comes and delivers water to me, that will be
the
height of my success. Wait and see.
Yes.
Mark my words.
That'll be it. Well, now that we've talked about water for the past 5 minutes, but, you know, just for anybody listening, the reason we're talking about water is because it is a million degrees in California today. It is 112. Well, my phone says it's 112, but it feels like 117.
Yes.
And that is ridiculous.
Yes. So, as you know, I was out in... I went out to Mar Vista this morning, and then we decided to drive up PCH and back through the canyon and do, like, a big loop just to kind of get out of the house. But the other reason that I wanted to do that drive, which was lovely, was because it's actually sort of retracing the steps of my case today.
Oh, interesting.
So, yes. So, today, I want to tell you the story of... Maitrice Levon Richardson. Maitrice LaVon Richardson was born April 30th, 1985, to Latisse and Michael Richardson. She was raised by her mom and stepdad Larry in Covina, California. She graduated from Cal State Fullerton with a bachelor's in psychology. Maitrice was a young black woman and an open lesbian in a two-year relationship with her girlfriend named Tessa Moon, which I love that name.
Say the name again. What was it?
Her girlfriend's name was Tessa Moon.
Tessa Moon? Oh, yeah. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
She worked at an LGBTQ nightclub in Long Beach and would model at the Playboy Mansion and, like, was a literal beauty queen and did, like, competed in the Southern California pageant circuit. So she was just, like, gorgeous.
Wow.
Lady killing it.
Yeah.
Maitrice lived in Watts with her great-grandmother in order to save up for grad school. She had plans to work as a guidance counselor or a social worker, specifically wanting to work with kids. So on September 16th, 2009, Maitrice was 24 years old. She drove 40 miles that day from Watts to Malibu.
Okay.
And nobody knows exactly why she went, but one theory is that she was going to tour Pepperdine as a potential grad school option. Okay. But in any case, Maitrice went to the restaurant Jeffrey's. Have you heard of Jeffrey's in Malibu?
No.
No?
Uh-uh.
I grew up in Calabasas, which is just, like, over the mountains from Malibu. So we would go to Malibu all the time.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey's is just, like, the place you go mm-hmm. by the beach.
Okay.
And it's, like, Malibu itself is, like, kind of a sleepy beach town, but it's, like, really wealthy. Very, very well off.
Yeah.
And in 2009, like, and I grew up in Calabasas in the 90s where it was still, where it was well off, but it wasn't, like, mm-hmm. what it is now, which is, like, just a celebrity hub.
Yeah.
But Malibu was always, like, a step above Calabasas in terms of wealth, but it was a similar kind of vibe where, so in 2009, it was just turning into, like, this, like, super, what's the word? Like, aspirational kind of place to be. And there's a lot of liberals, obviously, because it's California, but whenever there's, like, pockets of wealth, like in Calabasas or Malibu, there's lots of conservatives too. And I'm not saying that, I don't know how much that comes to play in this, but I'm just, like, painting a picture for you.
Yeah.
So this basically every step along this case is, like, basically my backyard. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of, like, why we went to drive around, today. And actually, like, I went and stayed with my parents last week, and they live in Calabasas still, and I would go on a walk with my parents in the evening, mm-hmm. and their house, like, two doors down from them has a big, you know, they have, like, their Black Lives Matter posters and mm-hmm. everything, which is great, and they have a poster that says Justice for Maitrice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this is, like, a super recent case.
No, this is from 2009. But it's picking up, it's regaining interest.
Okay.
So I'll get into it, but just, like, it's sort of like a hometown case for me, I guess.
Okay.
Okay. So all that to say, Maitrice drove from Watts to Jeffrey's in Malibu and parked. The staff found her going through one of the waiter's cars looking through his CDs. And when they asked her what she was doing, she just kind of, like, spoke in gibberish and, like, didn't make much sense. She ended up going inside the restaurant and ordering a steak and a cocktail. And reports from other patrons said that Maitrice was saying that she was from Mars and she was going to avenge Michael Jackson's death because he had just died.
Okay.
This was, like, a couple weeks after he had died. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, her thing that she kept saying. So she went alone, but she ended up, like, kind of sitting at another table with a bunch of people who at first were, like, kind of enjoying, like, this spunky, weird lady. But then she just kind of kept going and kept talking about like astrological signs and all that stuff, which like now I'm like, well, of course.
Yeah.
why wouldn't you ask everybody's sign
yeah.
right when you meet them?
And that's also like a conversation starter kind of thing, especially if you're randomly sitting with.
I think in context of everything, it was like
weird,
a strange thing. And I don't know exactly what she was saying about it. So, you know, but she was saying that and that she was saying that she was on her way to Hawaii and she was going to go and that she would call them when she got there. This group of strangers that she just sat with. So, like, things like that where you, like, at first they're sort of, like, entertaining it, and then you're like, okay, something is going on here. So when she finished her meal, she wasn't able to pay the $89 bill for a steak and a cocktail.
Why is that Malibu. Steak? Oh, yeah. I was Malibu. Literally like...
And let me give you a little... When I saw... $89 bill, I was like, oh, that's pretty good. Like, I was like, that's not that expensive for like Malibu Jeffries. Like,
what? Yeah, oh, no. No, yeah. No, no. I could literally go to the finest meat market and get like a filet mignon for less. Filet mignon and a whole fucking craft of vodka for less than $80.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
I spent $40 on vegan burritos in Malibu today.
What in the world is up with Malibu?
At like a taco stand. Because they can. Like, we were looking at like the beach houses, and it's like $6.5 million for like a 1,200-foot square foot, like two-bedroom, two-bath beach house. But it's like, because it's right on the water and whatever. And we were saying that, like, I wonder how many of them just, like, inherited these houses that were bought in the 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever, whoever's grandmother owns them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's my one thing. If I could time travel, I would just buy up tons of property.
Yeah.
Malibu is, like, a bit of old money, but I would actually say that, like, on the West Coast and L.A. specifically, it's, like, it's not actually old money because it's only a couple generations. Mm. And, like, this is, like, I grew up pretty well off and around, like, you know, people that thought like this. So it's like the kind of people that think that people that say the word classy are actually trashy. Mm. Because if you have that, you say it's tasteful or it's elegant. But if you say classy, it's like, you know, and I definitely believe that. So that's true.
Yeah.
but it's that kind of feeling where it's like, you know, it's the distinction of the levels of old money and new money, but it's like, it's not like YouTube money.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, which is like newborn baby new money.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, but it's still not old money because it's not wealth. Mm. It's still being rich versus being wealthy.
True, yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It does. No, it does. Because there's...
Because
there's a lot of like, quote unquote influencers that are making insane amount of money right now, but in comparison to the people that have, you know, generations of properties and investments, that's wealth
and own like institutions of business.
Yeah, that's wealth. That doesn't just because you've got, you know, 10 million followers and you get paid, you know, 40 bucks for every
and
share.
And it's also the difference of like if you live in one of those beach houses in Malibu. Great, that means you're doing well, but it's also like, well, do you own it or do you rent it? Because if you rent it, then,
yeah,
you know.
So this is the area that she...
This is... Everybody, I feel like, is very nice and, like, not actually judgmental in that way and that I've experienced, but that's also, like, from having been sort of, like, I wouldn't say on the inside, but, like, being friends with them. But when you see somebody that... is like not from there, you can recognize it.
Yeah.
So when Maitrice showed up in Malibu, people kind of like recognized that she wasn't from that area, which I don't think, and I don't think that anybody in this story, well, I can sort of.
Yeah, like, but she wasn't from Malibu, and I'm sure that came up in her ranting that was happening. Like, she was there.
Well, the other thing is that, like, in 2009, Malibu and Calabasas like had not very many black people. Like, when I was growing up, people would, like, sort of jokingly call Calabasas Calablackless.
Oh, my God, really?
Because there was no black people. Yeah. And it was, like, it was always done with, like, oh, that sucks. Like, not, like, a point of pride, necessarily, but just, like, a self-deprecating thing, but in a way that's, like, super shitty.
Yeah. No, it...
But, and then it's, like, it's, there's also the level of, like, the amount of wealth that you need to move to Malibu or Calabasas, places like that. Generally, the people that were of color were, like, entertainers or athletes. And it wasn't, so, like, it's that sort of, like, thing, if that makes sense. Yeah. So, and, like, Malibu as a beach is a public place, so a lot of people would go there of different. And it's free to go to the beach. So there are plenty of people that, like, go and hang out that aren't, that don't live around there. Mm-hmm. But also eating at Jeffrey's is, like, you got to be ready to pay $90 for a steak and a cocktail.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So Maitrice wasn't able to pay that $90. And she told the waiter that the other table that she was sitting at would cover her bill. But obviously they didn't.
Yeah. Did they leave before her?
No.
They were still there?
She seemed... Yeah.
Oh, okay.
According to everybody, she seemed pretty, like, calm and unperturbed by the dilemma. She just sort of was like, oh, well, okay. You know, kind of just, like, almost flippant about it. Yeah.
Did she say why and then, like, she wasn't able to cover it? Like, does she not have her wallet with her?
She didn't have the money to pay that. She couldn't afford it.
But she had, like, money on her.
She had her purse, but it was, like, you know, she had a debit card or whatever. It didn't get into, like, how much cash she had on her or whatever.
I was just thinking, but, like, if she also, did, like, have
not,
something.
She's not totally thinking rationally, so.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it, so.
There's other stuff at play here.
Okay.
She told the host that she was from Mars. So
she left her wallet and left my wallet in Mars.
She left her wallet in Mars. And that she would pay him with sex.
Oh.
And he refused.
Yeah.
She told him then that she was watching a soap opera at work when God instructed her to take the afternoon off and go to Malibu. So because of all this sort of, like, erratic behavior, not paying, all this kind of stuff, the staff decided to call the police.
Okay.
And they said there was an African-American woman who seemed to be on drugs, refusing to pay for her meal. So the police came and performed a field sobriety test, and Maitrice passed it. And it was determined that she wasn't on any other substance other than, like, the one cocktail that she had had at lunch. Mm-hmm. The police did find a bottle of tequila, a bottle of vodka, and a half a case of beer in her car. But, like, full, not drank.
Okay.
So, like, almost as if she had, like, the night before gone to the market or something, gotten it. They also found less than an ounce of weed on her. Which that part I'm always like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows if she had a joint or, like.
I mean, I get it wasn't legal then, but at this point it's like,
but
that's
anytime
not
a lot. Like, they find less than an ounce, I'm like, that seems planned.
Yeah, that's like she smoked a...
That's just my first...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she smoked a half a joint, and there was still a half left. That's what that means to me.
Yeah. So, despite witnesses at the scene saying that she wasn't a threat or wasn't in danger or, like, she wasn't belligerent or anything like that, and despite the fact that she passed her sobriety test, and... more than anything seemed to be having a mental episode and needing psychiatric care, the police arrested her for not paying her bill. Now, the staff at Jeffrey's discussed whether or not they would all chip in and cover her bill to avoid her arrest, but decided that she wasn't safe, like, to drive or anything, and just the way that her mind was, that she wasn't safe to, like, take care of her. So they thought it would be better if the police escorted her somewhere where she could get help. So half of me is like, I think that half of that group probably believed that, and then half of that group probably is covering their butts because they felt guilty.
Yeah, because for me, if it was like, oh, I don't think that this person feels safe, or that she's not going to be safe leaving the restaurant, like, honestly, the last thing I would do is call the police. The first thing I would do is, like, do you have somebody that we can call for you to pick you up
well,
here?
Well, yeah. And just to get into the mindsets of, like, the staff sort of at Jeffrey's mm-hmm. and the expectation in Malibu, like, staff and in a establishment like that is more like you and I are now, where they're, like, they're staff and they are treated as such. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's some sort of pressure from anybody to, like, remove this, like, get her out of here kind of thing. Like, it's not pretty. Like, let's get it gone.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
yeah,
dealing with rich people all the time, they have a certain level of expectation.
Yeah. And, like, the sight of seeing police officers in front of a restaurant, like a high profile restaurant.
Yes.
You know, I could see why they would want to de-escalate that situation
yeah.
in any way possible, regardless of how safe or yeah. unsafe they saw her being, you know.
Literally, last time I went and ate, like, in Malibu, like, a year ago, I was, like, with my sister and my cousin, and we were, like, getting tostadas or whatever, and we were sitting, like, looking out at the parking lot. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what restaurant this was. But then there was, like, a back area where somebody was having a party, and I guess one of the women drank so much and basically, like, had blood alcohol poisoning or something. And, like, cops showed up, ambulance showed up, and they, like, dragged her out. Not, like, dragged her out, but she was, like, passed out, and they had her on a stretcher. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, the quickest, like, surreptitious, like, you know, look, like, pick her up, get her out of her, done. Like,
yeah.
Try, and it was, like, definitely cause, like, people noticed and everything, but it really was, like, we're gonna take care of this and we're gonna move along and go back to your normal things. It wasn't like anybody was, like, talked to or anything like that. And obviously it was, like, I don't like the ambulance was the first one there, and I think the cops were just there because an ambulance was there.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that, but there's also the feeling of, to remember in 2009, like, I would say most people didn't know the truth about the cops then. Most white people didn't know the truth about the cops then. Let me amend that.
Yeah.
So when you see somebody and you're, like, a maitre d' at a restaurant, you're a wait staff at a restaurant, and you don't have the skills to help somebody with a psychological issue going on right now, you want to call somebody that you feel you trust and is going to take care of. And it's like, in a perfect world, this is what, that's what the cops would have done, you know? So it's like, I see why in a moment of panic they would, like, agree to do that. But it's also like, I feel like maybe it's more that they don't want to deal with it themselves. They don't want to deal with whatever's going on with her. They don't, like, you know, as soon as they become responsible for her, it takes their whole day. They're at work. Like, it's passing the buck to somebody else, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, she's arrested. And, so Maitrice was detained and booked at the Malibu Lost Hills Sheriff Station at 9 p.m. Her car, which was at Jeffrey's, which had her purse and her phone and her wallet in it, was towed. So the drive we did today was Jeffrey's up to the Lost Hills station.
Yeah.
And to get there, you have to go through this windy mountain canyon path, like past Pepperdine, up to where it's just like a two-lane road going through the mountains. And it's like 10 minutes through the mountains driving with no traffic, and then you go down another path, and it's another, like, 5 minutes up to the station. And on that drive up, there's, like, no other houses. There's little road turnoffs, maybe.
Yeah.
But in the canyon, it's just, like, No, it's just straight up.
Yeah.
So it's far. Mm-hmm. It's far from Jeffrey's to this station. Okay. And her car was towed and taken to a tow lot in Malibu.
Okay. Do you know how far the tow lot was from the police station?
I do, but it's coming later and I don't know off the top of my
head. Okay.
So Latisse, Maitrice, when she was booked, called her grandmother because that's who she lived with and that was the only number that she had memorized. But her grandmother was like 80-something years old. Her grandmother then called Maitrice's mom, Latisse, who found out she was at the Lost Hill Sheriff Station and called the station to like check in and figure out what was going on. So Latisse spoke on the phone to the police or the sheriff's department, saying that she was concerned about her daughter's behavior, but also worried that something were to happen to her if she was released. So Latisse said that Maitrice had severe bipolar disorder, which explains her actions and her, you know, everything that day. And the cops promised Latisse that the earliest Maitrice would be released was in the morning around 11 when Latisse could get there to pick her up. They agreed, and then they said, like, Maitrice would be able to call Latisse to check in.
Okay.
But Latisse never got a call. And records show that Maitrice was released at 12:38 a.m., 9 hours earlier than promised.
So, all right, keep going, because just keep going, because I have a ton of questions that I feel like you're going to end up answering anyway, so.
Yeah. A spokesperson for the sheriff's office named Steve Whitmore said, quote, "She exhibited no signs of mental illness or intoxication. She was fine. She's an adult." So they let her go. So in Malibu and Calabasas, so like the Lost Hills Sheriff Station is sort of like closer to Calabasas than Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
Maitrice was familiar with neither one of those places, but more familiar with Malibu because that's where she just come from. Mm-hmm. But it's essentially like a small town with like stuff closing at 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of street lights, a lot of like nature around, not a lot of street signs. It's not like there's cars and people going out about at all times. So if Maitrice was released shortly after midnight with no knowledge of the area, no phone, no money, no way to get to her car, she's essentially wandering around the wilderness.
Why would they not at least bring her to the tow lot? Or home?
Literally, there's so many questions that they just explain away with, like, she seemed fine and she was an adult.
Okay, adult or not, you can't just put somebody out on the street and be like, okay, figure out a way home. How was she supposed to do that? But
according to them, they can. That's their thing, is that they once they're out of booking, they are no longer their responsibility. I don't understand it either.
I just don't understand. Like, I don't get why, because you've heard of this before. You get arrested or you get whatever, like, at least offer the girl a fucking ride. Like, why?
I know. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know. So she was basically left to wander. And the next time she was seen was at 6:30 a.m. in the backyard of randomly former KTLA anchor Bill Smith.
Oh. So six hours later,
okay. 6 miles away, which I mapped it out, and it's like a 2-hour walk through the Santa Monica Mountains if you go directly that way. But basically, she was wandering around for 6 hours and then found herself in somebody's backyard. And Smith says that he opened his window to ask if she was okay, and Maitrice responded that she was just resting. And then Bill Smith said he called the police, but then when he went back out to check on her, she was gone. And that was the last time she was ever seen. And Latisse reported Maitrice missing that same day.
So the police didn't... He calls the police 6 hours later, and they didn't put two and two together that that could be the girl that they threw out on the in the middle of the fucking wilderness to walk around. Well,
this is where I don't know, like, all the inner workings of it, because so he calls 911 to report that somebody's, you know, in their thing. Mm-hmm. They dispatch somebody. I didn't get, like, the full walkthrough of who showed up at his house, who he called, what,
yeah,
you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, nobody reports on that kind of stuff, but. She specifically was at the Lost Hills Sheriff Department, which is different than the police department. But I don't really know why or how, but they keep making that distinction. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, if she was white, this would be a
But it's also, right. It's also the, like, in terms of, like, from the sheriff's point of view, is like, well, she was released 6 hours ago. So, there's no reason to think that she... Like, the assumption is not that she's wandering around the wilderness. Yeah. The assumption is she got on a bus and went home or whatever. You know? So, there's nothing to... That call was the first warning to them mm-hmm. that maybe she didn't get home.
Well, duh. Which,
like...
How did you expect her to get home? Or even get anywhere safely? I just...
Not their problem. It's... Can you just imagine, like... A, if she was in her sound state of mind, arguing that with them and just them stonewalling her and saying, not my problem. You should have thought about that before you didn't pay your bill. Blah, 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 blah. But she's not in a sound state of no. mind. You know?
Like, so even a person even that is, that. Like, and that's all, that also kind of lends to what her state of mind is, because me, in my right mind, I get arrested because I can't pay a bill for whatever reason. And they arrest me and then release me. And I know I have no way to get to my car. I have no way to get home. I'd be like, I'm not leaving unless somebody gives me a ride home. Or give me a phone so that I can call
give them...
a cab or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, I would be...
Get in a car with them.
True. Yeah, true. But, like, I'm not going to leave unless you give me a way right. out of here safely. Like, that's what right. somebody who is in their right mind would do. So the fact that she's literally willing to walk out the door and walk mm-hmm. in the middle of, like, the woods to get
yeah.
home or get wherever she thought she was going automatically yeah. makes it like, okay, this girl is not safe. She's not safe right. with herself. So why?
Right.
And it's just like, this is just the distinction that we make all the time. If she was white, blue eyes, blonde hair, mm-hmm. you know, they would have bought her a fucking, you know, coffee and brought her home. They would have brought her home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least given her the opportunity to call somebody.
If she was white, if we walk it all the way back, if she was white at Jeffrey's,
oh.
that's when they would have said what you said, mm-hmm. which is, do you have somebody I can call
yeah.
that can pay this? Can we cover this for you? Is there some sort of collateral? They would have examined every other
yeah the police probably wouldn't have even been involved
right
because
and I want to make it clear that in like explaining this their point of view in terms of calling the police I'm not advocating that that was the right move no. I was just trying to like paint a picture
yeah
but I just want to clarify
yeah I get that and I think that you know within even saying this right now like she's not if she was a different color, she, yeah. the police wouldn't even have been involved. They would have exhausted right. everything that they could have at the restaurant in order to not let that happen. And it just seems like everybody made so many assumptions up to this point. Like, well, we're mm-hmm. just going to call the police and we assume that the police are going to help her because she doesn't seem safe. You know, everybody is assuming that yeah. somebody else is in control of this situation when she's not even in control of what's happening to her.
Right.
So, like, now they're assuming, well, no, now the police are saying, we assumed she went home. Like, the one thing that I've learned just, like, being an adult is that you can't assume that anybody is doing anything right or mm-hmm. doing what they are supposed to be doing. So I just... But we are also living in a different world now where, you're right, wouldn't call the police at all because mm-hmm. we're not sure mm-hmm. of what officer you're going to get. No, do I? Yeah. I don't believe that every officer is bad or corrupt or, you know, who's going to abuse people or murder someone. But you don't know if you're going to get one of those cops. And that's the problem. Right. So, like, at this point, we're living in a world where we would, that would be a thing we would do before we would even call the cops. Like, let's try to figure this out on our own, because obviously there,
and
you
it's
know.
Also, yeah, it's the thing where if the cops were called on me and, you know, Officer Palm Tree comes to me, I'm looking at my palm tree. I was like, I need a name here. Officer Palm Tree comes and responds to the call against me. Mm-hmm. I'm more likely to get Officer Palm Tree being nice and understanding and letting me off.
Yeah.
If you get Officer Palm Tree, mm-hmm. you're not going to get that.
Yeah.
So the same single officer could be exactly what you're saying, like fair and nice, and like you don't think that every officer is like that. Mm-hmm. But it also is situation dependent.
Yeah.
And that's
and it's
a
not
big
only
problem.
It's not only like with police officers. Like, for instance, the other night we were having dinner and we lost power because of all the heat waves going on, so we keep losing mm-hmm. power. And there were, our neighbor has a like we all have generators because just in case the power does go out. And their generator was still going even though the power was back. And I said mm-hmm. to my boyfriend, I was just like, hey, like, why is their generator still running? Like, maybe we should go tell them that the power's back and they don't need to have their generator running. And he goes, okay, go over there and knock on the door. And I was like, no. Mm. Yeah. And he was like, why? And I was like, because I'm not going over there by myself. I was like, if you come with me, I'll go, but I'm not going to go by myself. And he didn't realize, he could not understand why I wouldn't go over there by myself. Mm-hmm. And then he just went by himself. And I mm-hmm. had to, like, explain, like, I'm sorry. We live in a world where if I knock on somebody's door randomly in the middle of the night, I don't know what I'm going to be met with on that other side of the door. But if you as a white man go over there and knock on the door, you're just being a concerned citizen. I could be completely misrepresented by just my skin color. So, mm-hmm. but just in the sense of he doesn't even realize that because he is a white man. And mm-hmm. that's something that me being a black woman will always think of. I'm always going to mm-hmm. be cautious when he's like, well, it's not a big deal. Just go over there. And I'm like, no, like I have to be that way because of the world we live in. So it's not even about the cops. Yeah. It's about, I mean, we told that story, or I had that story like a couple weeks yeah. ago where she, you know, all she did was try to seek help and she ended up dead. So it was like, right. you know, you never know. You really never know. And I think that everybody assuming that the other person is going to act correctly is the problem, especially in this story. Like mm-hmm. everybody's assuming the other person is going to be, you know, that helpful citizen, that helpful police officer that's going to make sure that somebody is safe, and you don't, that's never promised regardless, right. you know?
And it's like, that's the hope for everybody, because like all the people saying like Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, all mm-hmm. this cop stuff is like, I truly believe that they believe the cops are good because that is their experience yeah. with them. Mm-hmm. But two things can be true. There are two different worlds. And I want the people that say Blue Lives Matter, I want the police force they have for everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I want everybody to feel like the cops are there to protect them and to be heroes and mm-hmm. all of this stuff. I want to be able to enjoy my, you know, my murder procedurals and not,
yeah,
like, picking apart the police aspect of it. Which I will say, I do feel like the detective level, which is usually portrayed on like SVU and stuff like, and mm-hmm. like Prodigal Son, which I really like, is different mm-hmm. because there's more training and more education and everything involved, and it's like a different aspect of it. They're not like uniforms called to scenes.
Yeah.
However, still problematic. And that theme of like the thin blue line and mm-hmm. taking care of your own and like fudging the truth, because like if a cop uses questionable means for a good outcome. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that sort of, like, perpetuating that kind of myth.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's a whole different thing mm-hmm. about, like, where are cop shows going yeah. right now. But, anyways.
Wow. So, she
yes.
is last seen in...
So, she's last seen okay. 6:30 a.m. at the backyard of this guy's house.
Okay.
And then, poof, vanished.
Okay.
So, 2 days later... So that was September 15th. 2 days later, the sheriff's department did their first search of the area. But instead of using scent dogs to cover ground, they started at the place she was last seen, Bill Smith's house. Which is not, I wouldn't say that that's a bad starting place necessarily. Yeah. But they found her sneaker tracks and it looked like she was running. But then they lost the footprints after less than 100 feet from Dark Creek, which is a steep, like, rocky gorge. So it's she's in, like, this mountainous area. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, like, all these houses are built on the mountains. All the backyards are kind of, like, steep and sloping. Everything is basically a steep, rocky gorge. But this was, like, one that's, like, just sort of in the wooded area, not necessarily in... on private property.
Okay.
But nobody went to go look down there. Not because it's inaccessible. They just didn't go to look after they lost her.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And then, for 4 months, nothing happened. Of course. So, in January of 2010...
Wait, so, like, they're still not investigating... Nothing happens in the sense of, like, they're not investigating it anymore? Or, like, nothing comes...
I couldn't really find, like, a log of... anything that they were doing, because you'll, like, obviously, like, their moves are very questionable in this, mm-hmm. so they're not necessarily, like, being very open
okay.
to the public about everything.
Yeah.
But it basically is, like, everything sort of just, like, stops then. I don't know if they still did searches.
Uh-huh.
I don't know anything, but in January of 2010, the LAPD started searching. This is where that, like, distinction mm-hmm. starts sort of coming in, where it's, like, Sheriff's Department versus LAPD.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just because, like, you know, who has jurisdiction in Malibu. I don't know.
Yeah.
But on January 9th, 2010, 300 volunteers plus the LAPD searched 18 square miles of Malibu Canyon but found nothing. And then in June of 2010, so 6 months later, another search was conducted close to the house where she was last seen. Nothing was found. So there are these, like, searches. I just don't know how often they happened, or, you know, I couldn't really, like, find
yeah.
a good sort of, like, solid report on that. At one point, a search party found a graffiti mural of a naked black woman in various graphic scenes. Which they felt was, like, it could be a coincidence, but it felt, like, oddly specific because, again, not a lot of black people out in Malibu.
Yeah.
Weird. There are places in the canyon where it's, like, old shacks or old, like, sort of abandoned, you know, garages or like, buildings that are from the 60s or something mm-hmm. that sort of, like, were abandoned, where people go and do graffiti and everything. That's a pretty common thing
mm-hmm.
out in those hills. So I wouldn't say, like, the graffiti mural by itself was weird mm-hmm. or anything or out of place, but the content of it was.
Okay.
Because it felt like was it depicting something that happened? Like,
mm-hmm.
what would inspire that kind of thing when they're looking for mm-hmm. Maitrice in this exact area? So that sort of, like, raised some questions, but it was kind of, like, you know,
yeah,
I don't know, nothing like serious, and there was no, like, signature, no way to find out who had done it.
Yeah,
who had done the mural, I mean.
Okay.
So, and I say mural very loosely, but mm-hmm. whatever. Finally, on August 9th, 2010, 11 months after she disappeared, Santa Monica Mountain Rangers, so not police, not law enforcement, nothing, were searching for a possible weed farm connected to the Mexican cartels.
Oh.
Crazy. But instead, because they knew
funny,
there was like
a, I don't know why I found that a little funny.
It was, it feels like every aspect of this feels like a weird show where it's like, you know, you have the red herring of like, is the cartel involved?
Yeah.
You know, that's crazy.
It definitely does feel like that. And it's also like, it feels like something where, like, if you were writing this story as to like a way to bring, like, to bring in the mountain rangers, like how they found it, it's just like, well, there, you know, like if I was writing this, that's would be like, okay, well, what are the mountain rangers looking for? How about a weed farm? Mexican cartel. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like it was done backwards almost, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I guess there was a property where that had actually been connected to them though. Like, so there was, the Mexican cartel was growing weed there, but they had like vacated by the time because they knew that they were
coming,
found out. So they like left and took everything.
And it's probably so because they have cops certain cops wrapped around their fingers at some point, and they gave them a heads up. So then they, you know, that's how they keep evading this whole thing. God, I love the Mexican cartel.
Don't say that.
That's not
great. So these Santa Monica Mountain Rangers were searching for a possible weed farm, but instead, below Payuma Canyon Road, which I don't know if you've ever been out that, but like, that street in particular is like the windiest, steepiest, scariest street. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a friend in high school that lived off Payuma, and when I would go out to her house like after dark, it was just like the scariest like street, because it was, I felt like I needed to be like a Spanish mountain goat to like get up it. It was just anyways, I don't know if the whole street is like that, but that's what I remember of it.
Yeah.
So below that road, they found a, quote, naked mummified body in a creek bed. And clothes were found scattered nearby. A pair of blue jeans, a pink belt, and a dark blue bra. Hmm. The body was found adjacent to a property called Dry Gulch Ranch, which was used as a filming location for westerns, all this kind of stuff. And sometimes porn. So, which, let me say, any filming location, like, I would say 90% of filming locations are open to porn. Like, they don't care what kind of
film you
that you have.
As long as you're paying to rent it, who cares?
Right. Yeah. So a lot of these, a lot of the reports, I was like, oh, it was like by this porn place, whatever. And I was like, yeah, big deal. Like,
Like, you know, the porn industry is huge, so I don't understand why that would be
shocking.
And
it's super problematic and everything, and but it did kind of feel, I was like, they're just, like, fear-mongering to be, like, sketchy porn and cartel people.
Oh, God.
Ugh, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that would be a bad pitch to the story if it was actually not true.
Yeah. But I looked up Dry Gulch Ranch, and I found, like, an old real estate listing for, like, the property adjacent to it, which you, I think, was like assumed to have once been a part of it, or, you know, some sort of connection to it, and it's like a nudist colony. So I was like,
all right,
maybe, I don't know. Anyways, whatever. Definitely drugs were done there, so
for sure. And I mean, but that doesn't mean, you know,
but it definitely felt like another kind of red herring. Yeah, that, like, somebody was dangling in front of everybody to, like, look over here.
Yeah, for sure.
So the rangers called in the body and the police arrived. The coroner, this is important. The coroner called ahead and told the team not to touch the body. But instead, the police immediately bagged it. As a result, neither the crime scene nor the victim were photographed or examined properly. Which,
what?
I'm sorry. That's like 101, that you don't touch anything until the coroner gets there. Like, maybe you put up
the caution tape or
the evidence. Yeah.
Wow.
So that to me was a bigger red flag than the porn ranch.
Why did they say why they were so stupid?
Maybe, but I can't remember. So the body was found in such a state of decomposition that it was impossible to identify the cause of death. but they were able to confirm eventually that it was Maitreese's body.
Okay.
But it's unknown how long she lived after her release from the station and after last being seen in that backyard.
I don't understand. So, wait. There's no way to find out how she died? Like, there's nothing on the body?
I think that it means that, like, she was decomposed so badly that, like, if her skull was bashed in, they would have been able to see that because of the bone stuff. But if she was strangled, there's no, like, there's no neck to see bruising on. If she was suffocated, there's not enough tissue to see that. If she was drowned, like, her lungs weren't enough to, like...
Oh, my God.
You know, so, there was nothing... There was no cause of death that was directly related to, like, bones or skeletal issues. Mm-hmm. So they could not determine how she died. There were some residents of that area that reported hearing screams a few nights after she disappeared. I don't know when they reported that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was after the body was found. I don't know if it was the night that they heard the screams. No more detail was given about that, which I was like,
wow.
Okay. Cause it's like, if the police called me and was like, hey, 10 months ago, did you happen to hear screaming around?
Yeah.
I'd be like, I don't know.
Like, maybe.
I didn't even live here 10 months ago.
Yeah. And it's also like, I mean, if we living, you know, in the valley, if we heard screams, it would be like, well, that could be anything, you know? But I feel like out there, where it's kind of not, you know, like, it would kind of be typical for me living on the street that I live on to hear stuff like that in the middle of the night.
Yeah. It would be weird out there. But also, another thing about living out there is that there's tons of coyotes. Mm. And oftentimes they can scream or cry and sound like dogs or babies or people.
Yeah. We have coyotes out here, too. Yeah. Well, where my boyfriend lives, and when they have a kill, they do, mm-hmm. they have this, like, distinct cry that does sound like screeching almost, but it's to tell, like, mm-hmm. their other coyote buddies that they have found food, pretty much. Yeah. So, yeah, like, I feel like there's other things that could have chalked this up to being just another typical noise that wouldn't be so... easy to recall on if somebody came 10 months later to be like, hey, did you hear this?
Yeah. So LAPD, not Sheriff's Department, ruled her death was not a homicide and that there was no foul play suspected.
If you count the facts...
Their theory... Listen to this. Oh, God. Okay. Mm-hmm. Their theory is that Maitreese was having a manic episode, wandered into the canyon, took off her clothes... and died of anaphylactic shock after being exposed to poison oak.
Mm.
Have you heard of anything so stupid?
That's kind of a stretch.
That is, like, literally...
Yeah.
The stupidest thing I've ever heard.
This is, it's a backwards way of getting off the hook. You know? Yeah. They're just like, well... You know what I mean? They're just, they're making things up as they go to cover what they did wrong in the beginning. So.
I'm like, if a better lie is that she was, like, she starved or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, because it's also it's like, oh, so we don't weird. Want this to be, like, this was a natural cause. So. Right. They don't want. To because if they make
they don't
it,
want to be like she was out there for so long and nobody found her
yeah
like
because then it's like they were negligent and put somebody mm-hmm. who was in danger of hurting themselves or somebody else on the street. In this way it's like, well, she was in the middle of her episode and because she took off all of her clothes and laid, you know, like it's just a mm-hmm. way to make it like this was her fault and not our fault for putting her in that position. You know, it's just, it's a backwards way to get yourself off the hook and, like, not be blamed for, you know.
Yeah.
Murdering someone.
So, yeah. Maitreese's father has a different theory that I am much more inclined to believe.
Okay.
He believes that the cops took advantage of Maitreese while she was vulnerable and then dumped her body. Which, unfortunately, sounds much more fathomable than an allergic reaction to poison oak.
Yeah.
So there's a huge gap of information about what happened and where she went, obviously. Mm-hmm. Police Captain Thomas Martin claimed that there was no surveillance footage of Maitreese leaving the station. But then, 5 months after she was released and before she was found, he suddenly found the tape. And he said it had been in his desk's top drawer the whole time.
Oh, wow.
Can you even, like, just the amount of stupid lies?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you never open your desk drawer? Like, what?
Wow. Just, it's so... That doesn't even deserve a response. Like, honestly, are you kidding? Like...
It's just, like, you may as well not say where you found it.
Yeah, like, just like, just say, like, clearly you guys are great about making up bullshit lies, especially, like, in regards to what happened to her. So, like, try to come up with something better. Like,
ridiculous. Oh my God. So, the tape shows Maitreese clearly psychologically unstable in a cell, rocking herself side to side. Mm-hmm. And then later, it shows her released and walking outside with a deputy following right after her.
Wow.
So, that deputy, I couldn't find his name. But that deputy originally said he wasn't at that station that night.
Ooh.
But when, after it came out that he was on the tape, he said, oh, well, I was there, but I don't know what happened to her. I didn't see her. Like, but the tape, and I didn't see the tape, but reports say that the tape, it looks like he's, like, intently following after her specifically. Not that she walked out and that he walked out. So... I don't know what the fuck that's about.
You want to know what my theory is?
Yes. It's probably the same as mine, but...
Yeah. He drove her home.
Uh-huh. Air quotes.
Air quotes. Oh, sorry. I forgot people can't see me. Air quote, he drove her home. And, well, I guess there's... Would there be a way with decomp to see if she was sexually assaulted?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, my theory is that she was sexually assaulted. He probably strangled her in the process, freaked out, and dumped her body.
I think a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think he probably... There was probably some conversation that he had with her outside or whatever. Mm-hmm. She was like... Maybe he did offer to drive her home and she refused. She went one way, he went the other way, whatever. I don't think anything happened right around then because she was spotted at 6:30 a.m. But I think that he knew she was out there and found her. And then what you said.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe because... And
I think there's more than one person involved, though.
Yeah. And the thing that makes me think that this might have been a little bit more... Well, yeah, because there is that gap in time. So, I just, I'm thinking back of, like, where she offered the hostess or whatever, or the guy, she offered to have sex with him for the bill. So, like, what wouldn't stop her from saying that for a ride home? You know, or to, like... You know, if they were like, we're going to just...
But he didn't take her from the station, is the thing.
Yeah. So, like, but, like, I feel like that might have been, played a role at some point. Like, if she was willing at that point, and obviously not in the right state of mind, I think that she could have said something like that to him, which might have, in the moment for him, been like, no, obviously I can't accept that, you know? But then knew she was out there and was like, I'm going to go take her up on that offer. And it just went south.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it was like that went down at the station or whatever, and there was, if people saw them leaving together, you know, like all that kind of stuff, The other theory that I kind of have is, like, maybe it wasn't anything to do with the police, but maybe it was somebody random that hurt her and killed her and dumped her. But it's still, like, the theme of this story, this case, is, like, everybody passing the buck on who is responsible to help somebody in need.
Yeah.
Right? So it's, like, even if the police, a policeman, a sheriff's deputy, whatever, even if they didn't physically, you know, assault her, do any of that stuff, they didn't take care of her.
Yeah.
So,
like, you're supposed to protect and serve, and you did the opposite of that. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is the other thing that I'm like, okay. So Maitreza's parents, who are divorced, both filed lawsuits against the L.A. County Sheriff's Department for releasing Maitreza in her state. They maintain that the police knew about her bipolar disorder, which, because of the phone call with her mom.
Mm-hmm, they did, yeah.
And the state that she was in. Weird thing, Tessa Moon, my favorite name, who's Maitreza's girlfriend, claimed that she didn't know anything about bipolar disorder and that she didn't have mental issues. Mm. But I'm like, you know, you can have lows, like... Mm-hmm. She could have not had any episodes for 2 years. Yeah. Like, that's possible.
And she could have been medicated and just didn't say anything and then stopped taking her medication. There's so many ways that this could have ended at this point.
Yeah. But basically, Maitreza's parents each won $450,000 in their lawsuits.
Oh, wow.
And that was the thing that I was like, okay... So that, I feel like if they won the lawsuit, that's kind of an admission that something shady went
down. If anything, neglect. They neglected to help her in a time where she clearly needed help. And they lied to cover up their tracks with the tape, with everything, with even her cause of death. Like, they're trying to tuck things away, and which is like... I hate to say this, but it's like, I'm not surprised that they're doing this, that this is the way that this went down, you know? Yeah. And it's like, that's the problem. Like, they're so, like, if I'm not surprised that a police officer is going to shoot a black man, or if I'm not surprised that this situation ended in her death, that's not okay. Like, I don't understand why there's so many people that are still on the other side of this. Like, what, this is us fighting against that huge problem, not us fighting against each other. So
it's just wow. So Maitreza's family also asked the Attorney General's office to review how the sheriff's office handled the case, which, what you're saying, that's that's the neglect. In November 2015, Attorney General Kamala Harris determined that they didn't find any grounds for criminal charges against the sheriff or his deputies, and no evidence that they mishandled Maitreza's family's complaint against them. So I was like, oh, and we all know Kamala has you know, questionable history with the police. We don't love that about her. We, however, love her for vice president because it means that we don't have somebody else.
Yeah. And that's what, like, that's where I stand on a lot of, because there's a lot of things that I disagree in that side of things, but it's like, what is the alternative is not possible. Like, that can't happen. So I was hoping that you saying Kamala Harris was going to be a little bit better, but never mind. All right, cool. It is what it is.
Well, this next sentence might. It made me go, like, maybe there's hope for her. Because everybody makes mistakes. Yeah. Everybody can learn. Mm-hmm. Everybody, like, politics is a hard game. I don't know. I don't like that last sentence I just said, but whatever.
Okay.
So in 2016, so that was her ruling in 2015. Okay. In 2016, she reversed her stance, and she did open a criminal investigation into the case.
Okay.
I don't know what changed her mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she lost a donor. I don't know what happened. Mm. But she made the right choice there.
Okay.
However, on December 30th, 2016, the Attorney General's office determined that there was insufficient evidence to support a prosecution, which there is, because people are lying and destroying shit and losing tapes and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So while there's insufficient evidence to support a prosecution, it doesn't mean that they didn't find out what happened, yeah. You know? So that's one of those things where it's like, I feel like the fact that they opened the case and then the outcome was that there was insufficient evidence to support a prosecution, mm-hmm. rather than they found definitive evidence that they are innocent, points to some shit went down, you know?
Yeah.
On the 10-year anniversary at a memorial held for Maitrice, LA Sheriff Alex Villanueva says that he welcomes any new information. So this is September 2019.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later.
Okay.
He welcomes any new information, but also said, quote, there's no reason to rehash a case already subjected to investigations by the state attorney general's office, the LA County District Attorney's Office, and the Sheriff's Department's internal review, all with no evidence of wrongdoing found. And Villanueva said he had no reason to question those findings. So, let me get into that. At a fucking memorial for Maitrice, you say that shit?
Yeah.
You say, like, here's a lollipop, here's a Band-Aid, but, like, let's not ask any questions. Yeah. Like, that's so patronizing.
Yeah.
And, like, is that the word, patronizing?
Huh?
When you, like, talk down to somebody?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I don't know why I thought. Anyways. And so much like, oh, well, we already had 3 investigations and nobody found any evidence of wrongdoing, which is not true.
No.
They just didn't find any, like, sufficient evidence to close the case. Because the Attorney General's office is only going to take up cases against the Sheriff Department if they 100% can win.
Yeah.
And also there's so much politics involved that it's like, who's going to get in trouble that's going to hurt your next campaign?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to fight that fight.
Exactly. And already, it's just like, we know that these types of situations is who can save their own ass and who's going to mm-hmm. be able to come out of this the favorite or on top. And like you said, they're not going to fight this fight unless they know they can win. They're not going to fight for anything unless it benefits them. So
right.
In their mind, Maitrice is already gone. There's nothing we can do about that. So let's just keep moving forward and try to, quote unquote, you know, make things better. But it's just like, you don't make things better when all you think about is yourself. Like, you're leaving this family, you know, literally with nothing. Oh, $450,000? Yeah. I'd literally be like, that's never going to bring her daughter back. They're never going to bring...
No, it's like quantifying her life in like,
yeah.
No, mm-hmm. like, no, that's insane.
Yeah.
So I was, that like really pissed me off that he like took a speaking engagement like mm-hmm. that to be like, let's all quiet down now.
Yeah.
Just like, bitch, please get out of here. But in a little bit of good news, since Maitrice's death, the Lost Hills Sheriff Department now doesn't wait to make missing persons
cases
reports
for
adults. Mm-hmm. So, like, remember how season 1, episode 1, Ramona was not, you know, they had to wait 36 hours mm-hmm. or whatever. Now you can make a missing persons report immediately for an adult.
Okay.
And they make sure that if they arrest somebody that they have and they take with them, that cell phones and personal property
are
on the people that they, well, this is what they're supposed to do. Yeah. Who knows if they actually do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the people as they arrest them. Mm-hmm. Because if Maitrice was allowed to bring her purse, or if a cop had got her purse for her, mm-hmm. she wouldn't have been in this situation.
Yeah.
She would have been able to make a phone call. Mm-hmm. And they also changed the way that they handle mentally ill people, making sure that they're evaluated by a mental health team and not just
released,
like, locked up for 3 hours and then released.
Yeah. Which seems like Maitrice's, that should have been a thing before this happened, but, you know.
I know. The fact that it was, like, in 2009 to 2016. I don't know when they put this into effect. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, seriously? Like, that should have been, like, the thing from day one. So, Maitreese's parents are still seeking what really happened to their daughter. And, obviously, new interest in Maitreese's case was sparked during the Black Lives Matter protests beginning in March of 2020. Mm-hmm. But as far as I could see, no new information has been revealed.
Okay.
Maitreese's friends and family have forgiven and supported the manager of Jeffrey's, who originally called the police, who he reached out to make amends and has felt, you know, very guilty. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
But also very big of them to forgive him for that.
Yeah.
But Maitreese's case is still open.
Okay.
Which surprised me, considering Alex Villanueva and all this stuff saying, like, basically forget about it and shut up.
Yeah.
And I believe that somebody knows something.
Oh, yeah.
And I really want to keep the pressure on this to find out what happened to her.
Yeah.
This, to me, is a perfect example of what redistributing the funds and the police budget can do. And, you know, the pithy way to say that is defunding the police, but really what it's doing is taking the super bloated police budget, cutting it because they don't need all that, dedicating more money to training and more money to creating other services you can call when people are in need.
Yeah.
So when somebody can't pay their bill and is having a mental health episode, you can call a number that sends out a social worker to help them. Mm. So you don't end up arresting somebody, sending them out into the Santa Monica Mountains to die.
Yeah, because there's not every situation needs a police officer with a gun.
No.
You know?
And it's like some places need, you know, police officers. If a violent bank robbery is happening, if there's a hostage situation, that's where highly trained teams like SWAT and hostage negotiators come in that are not general police uniforms.
Yeah.
However, the most mundane things that officers get called for, you don't need an officer for. It's the thing where it's like, people understand the fire department and how you can call 911 and report a fire and a fire truck will show up to you.
Yeah.
This is the thing where it's like, if you call and report somebody is having a mental health crisis, instead of sending, you know, your three options, which is ambulance, fire truck, or police officer, there's another option. There's a social worker.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that I think that I get excited about, is that the opportunities to help, the opportunities for jobs for people.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like an opportunity of, like, actual growth rather than, I think, what people that are against it think, which is, like, that it's going to be the Wild West. Because I think it's going to be the opposite, and I think things are going
to
get better.
Yeah, I think and a lot of people that I talk to that, you know, like, I do know people who are Trump supporters. Like, I know, like, we live in a world where there's you know, and I think that their problem with the whole defund the police thing is that they see, oh, well, we need to arm ourselves, because if there's no one out there protecting, if they're going to cut the police budget and they're not going to hire police officers or, like, more police officers, then I'm going to need to protect myself. Like,
but that's when you get people like Kyle Rittenhouse.
Exactly. And it's just like, that's not what this is. Yeah. Like, I think that somebody really needs to, I mean, there is ways to get out there and understand what defund the police actually means. But I think their idea of it is that, oh, well, then we're just going to live in a world where there's no law and order. There's no, you know, and everybody just has a free for all. But it's just like, that's not what that means, you know? And I think defund the police is a lot more severe than what is actually going to happen. And it's just like, no, we're just going to clean shit up, you know? Yeah. And we're going to allocate money to helping people and not calling the police for like a small, like, picnic, like, why are you calling the police because somebody's having a picnic in a park? Or why are you calling the police because a little girl's selling fucking lemonade? Like, why is this happening? Yeah. And it's because the people think...
Why are you calling the police because somebody used a counterfeit bill?
Exactly.
Or sold loose cigarettes or had a bag of Skittles.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, that's the thing that, like, we need to clean our police force up in every state, in every, you know, like, that's what that means. And I think people are just not reading into it because they feel like they don't have to, but really they just need to read into it so that they understand.
And there's
they just need
and
to understand.
The rhetoric around it is scary. Mm-hmm. When I first heard it, I was like, but what else is there? Because literally there's never been a conversation about the other options there are.
Yeah.
But you know what? When I see something that I react to with fear for the first time, then I read more about it to understand. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh, cool. I looked at the line items of the LAPD budget, and it's like there's millions and millions of dollars allocated to training people to, like, shoot accurately, because people can log hours to go shoot and practice at the shooting range. And it's like, I do think that that's, you know, you need to be able to, like, practice and everything, but it's like the amount that you actually need, like, it was something like, I'm gonna get the number wrong, but like tens of times more practice rounds than actually, like, needed in the field rounds.
Okay.
And it's like, what do you use a BB gun?
Yeah.
You know? Like, the difference between switching out the bullets that it's practiced with actually would, like, drop the budget incredibly lower. And the amount of, like, repurposed army equipment and stuff that they get, and they is just, like, oh, my gosh. I'll see when we post this if I can find that, what I'm referring to. I also have seen actual current numbers floating around for other things, other places you can call than the police if somebody's having, like, a homelessness crisis, a mental health crisis, other resources that I think everybody should save and have in case they ever need to call for help.
Okay.
But it's not a situation where you need a police officer.
Yeah.
So we will also share that on our Instagram.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
So all that to say that Maitreese's death was completely unnecessary.
Very preventable, for sure.
We have very preventable. Every level of this failed her, from the people that called the police to the sheriff's department to the guy that saw her in the his backyard. And we need to start thinking as a community. You need to start thinking of everybody as your brother or sister that you need to help, that you have a responsibility to help, rather than somebody who's trying to hurt you that you need to hurt first. And I think that's what this all comes down to. There's always going to be bad people, but we need to stop thinking individualistically and start thinking as a community. Because the individualism at the center of, like, America and capitalism and everything is, like, that's the poison.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Lead with compassion.
And we can lead with compassion. Lead with compassion, and then know who to call, because nobody else should have to, like, end up the way Maitreese ended up. I hope that her family gets some comfort to know that people are still fighting for her, however, like, small a drop in the bucket that may feel like. She is worth it to keep fighting for. This week's episode was written and edited by me, Devin Balsamo-Gillis, with music by Holly Amber Church and social media by Kelsey Grunberg.
For pictures and sources, please follow us on Instagram at onthearbehalf_pod and on Twitter at onthearbehalf_.
Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen.
On their behalf, thank you for listening.